Edward, by the grace of God, King of England, Lord of Ireland, and Duke of Aquitaine, to all subjects in his land of Snowdon, and of other his lands in Wales, greeting in the Lord.
With Llywelyn and Dafydd dead, Edward I set about ensuring that the Welsh didn't rise against him again.
The divine providence hath now of its favour wholly and entirely transferred under our proper dominion the land of Wales with its inhabitants, all obstacles whatsoever ceasing.
He embarked on an ambitious programme of castle building across North Wales. These castles may have been part of a military strategy, but there's no doubt that they were there to intimidate too.
Carnarvon certainly. Carnarvon is propaganda, imperial propaganda in stone, isn't it? You've got that banded masonry like the walls of Constantinople, the Eagle Tower, statue of Edward II above the main gate. And they're all magnificent. And if you imagine them whitewashed perhaps as well, certainly Conwy was whitewashed, towering above the towns and the castle in Carnarvon, towering above the marketplace, which would have been, the buildings would have been far smaller. You could ask what people thought about them. What did people in Carnarvon think about that castle? Did they look at it and say, the King of England is a great man, we must be very careful? Or did they spit and utter oaths about the King of England's parentage? Or did they just walk past it and think, castle? Most of the time they weren't even used. They're not even properly garrisoned. Carnarvon seems to have been used as a kind of public works depot for a long time.
Around these castles grew boroughs which were a major step forward in the development of towns in Wales. Archaeologist Nancy Edwards.
The town itself would have been laid out on a gridiron pattern, and then the various streets would have been divided into long, narrow burgage plots. And these burgage plots would each have had a house at the front, which would have faced onto the street. And the houses would have also been the shops and craft centres, or craft workshops, of the people who lived in the town. The houses themselves were perhaps not so different in certainly the 13th century and the 12th century from their rural counterparts.
There was this idea to begin with that in some of these boroughs that the Welsh weren't allowed to go and live there. You find this sort of apartheid, say, in the Lordship of Denbigh, where, well, for a start, the Welsh were cleared out of the more fertile lands and put on sort of moorland to make room for English settlers in the countryside, and Welsh weren't meant to live in the town of Denbigh either. That's one of the new marcher lordships. Having said that, in reality, these distinctions did start to get broken down and eroded in some places.
But the interesting question, of course, is how far the Welsh population, how many of the Welsh population were able to speak English, and how many of the English settlers were able to speak Welsh? And probably there was a good deal of bilingualism both sides. There had to be. There just had to be. It was no use going and becoming a Burgess of Carnarvon and coming from Cheshire and just sitting down and refusing to speak any Welsh. You couldn't have coped. But these towns were supposed, in theory, they were English settlements. But there had to be a substantial Welsh element in them. And there certainly was on market day, because they were supposed to be intended to be the local commercial centres.